Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the risk takers, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the boldest voices in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about breaking barriers, defying expectations, and rewriting the rules. No limits, no apologies, just real talk. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
507. I had to let that start a little, right? Four Little Diamonds, ELO. I put the bumper music up on the X, formerly Twitter. In fact, I even started doing a Spotify playlist for the songs that we play each and every day. We'd love to see you tomorrow at our fifth out of six Fish Fry Fridays. I'm not good at math. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, this is number 5. St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood tomorrow. Come out and see us. We'll do the Reardon Roundtable live on the panel tomorrow. Jane will be with us. We always have Jane Duker fans that either want to heckle or meet Jane. She'll be out there. Greg Keller, who always brings the fire, and our friend John Gaskin on the panel. Brad Young's going to swing by for a visit as well. I'm hearing that Mr. Cusimano might be in person as well for his segment in the 4 o'clock hour. If you're watching on the YouTube channel or on the X, formerly Twitter, I'm going to show off my XXXY shirt, which is awesome. I have my hat in the other room. I forgot to put that on. Jen, say I'm sporting gear today. How about that?
Awesome. That's so exciting. I love it.
I love it, too. And I'm just going to tell people, and I say this sincerely, I get a little picky on the quality of, you know, like even T-shirts. They're so bad oftentimes. There's a regular cut. But your quality on this T-shirt is outstanding. And it's, I don't even know what the blend is, but it doesn't necessarily feel like, you know, just your regular workout shirt, but it also doesn't feel like a regular T-shirt. So I like it. It's very comfortable.
That's great. I'm not sure what tee you're wearing because I'm on the phone and I can't see you. But our sort of graphic tees are 100% cotton, and then we have workout tees that are, you know, a blend, and they're moisture wicking, and so I'm not sure what one you're wearing, but the 100% cotton tees are a favorite, and they're thick.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I have the 100% cotton, but it doesn't feel like most cotton t-shirts. That's all I'm saying. It feels better.
I think because most are so bad today.
Yes.
You know, they're really thin and poor quality, and this is very high quality, best cotton in the world. Made in Peru. So, you know, they'll last you a long time. It's worth the extra.
It is. You know, and I mentioned my hat because I have a hat, too. I barely get to wear my hat. I love it because my wife keeps stealing my hat, Jen. She keeps calling it her hat. So I think I need to
make... Well, then you need another
one. I know. I'm going to go on the website. Look, I do love the stuff that you have. But let's talk about some of these issues. I played some of the audio from Stephanie Turner before the end of the hour. She's the fencer that took a knee when a biological male was about to compete against her. Here's Riley Gaines on that.
Isn't it amazing how simply this can be explained? The other side likes to say this is complex. It's a complex issue. Stephanie Turner, number one, she's a heroine in my eyes. She said it so simply, I cannot do this. I am a woman. This is a man. This is a woman's tournament. I will not fence this individual. Keep in mind, this was at a junior women's Olympic qualifying event. So it's a really big deal. These aren't scrubs. Again, these are like, it's the pinnacle of their sport at this point.
Yeah, and Jen, we still have, you know, examples of this, like this one, and this was an impressive example with this, you know, fencer deciding to take a knee, doing it respectfully, saying, I'm just not going to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's amazing. I don't know. She kept her calm. The officiant, I don't know what you call it, in fencing, said this means you'll get a black card, which means she'll be expelled from the competition, possibly from the league, and not be able to compete for some time. And she went with her heart and she did the right thing and she stuck to her guns and she did it. She stayed on bended knee and, you know, she stood down to stand up for women's sports. And of course her opponent, the man, got a little flustered and angry, and he kept saying, this is allowed. USA Fencing allows this, which they do. That doesn't make it right, and that doesn't mean he's not a cheater.
But let's talk about, because we were all excited. I think I even had you on. President Trump signs that executive order keeping men out of women's sports. It was an amazing event. All these little girls were up there when he did the bill signing. That was a couple of months ago. It was February 5th. So we think that the NCAA kind of revises its participation policy, but it doesn't really do that. Are they doing an end run at this point? What's your sense of what's actually happening?
Well, there's two separate things happening. This fencing competition in particular is not an NCAA-governed competition. Stephanie is 30 years old. She's not in college. She's been fencing for 11 years, only 11 years, and she's at the top of her game. This is a competition governed by USA Fencing, which sits underneath the U.S. Olympic Committee. That was not, none of those sports or competitions or competitors were impacted by the executive order, which was a concern that I had from the outset. And I don't think people understand that in the sports governance landscape. Then you have what is governed by the EO, which is athletics within federally funded programs. That's in K through 12 schools, and that's in colleges and universities. This was not one of those. And for those programs, first off, you have an NCAA policy that was released the day after the EO, which is toothless and has a million holes in it, and they're continuing to allow males to compete in women's sports. For one thing, the proof of sex that they require is a birth certificate, which can be altered in 44 states, not a test, but a birth certificate. And then the other thing is basically every blue state is just ignoring it, and not only ignoring it, but like actively, you know, aggressively saying we are not going to abide. Our state law says you can compete in the sport that aligns with your identity. So, you know, they'll do anything to not do what Trump says. They think that makes them heroes, even if the voters are not aligned with that, which they are not.
Well, not even close to be aligned. That's what's amazing. And, you know, I don't know if you have any thoughts on Gavin Newsom's, you know, epiphany that probably isn't really an epiphany. But then in California, they have this opportunity to put this into state law and they didn't do it, right? I don't know if Newsom would have signed it anyway, but they didn't do it in Sacramento.
Yeah, you got it right. He recently, you know, he launched a podcast. I think a lot of folks know that his first episode was with Charlie Kirk, and he sort of surprisingly acknowledged that it is deeply unfair for males to compete in women's sports. But you have to listen to the end of the phrase, because he went on to say, but this is a, you know, a group that's very vulnerable and they want to kill themselves. And, you know, sort of the implication at the end was, so we got to kind of let them do it anyway. So he's willing to forsake half the population, women and girls, for a handful of, you know, unwell boys that should be helped in another way. This is not particularly helping them. And it isn't compassionate towards women and girls, and it's not in alignment with Title IX, let alone the executive order. So I think Gavin is trying to kind of play both sides against the middle. He's trying to position himself as moderate for the 2028 presidential election. He is anything but moderate, and he is not doing anything to take a stand to protect women's sports. And to your point, I think it was just yesterday, two bills in California were, you know, just taken down. They would have protected girls' sports in K through 12 as well as college. And I think one of the state senators talked about how this was akin to Nazism.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But I wanted to play this because if you didn't hear, this is Taylor Starling, who's one of the high school athletes who testified in Sacramento. But listen to this here.
I was removed from my varsity girls team and replaced by a newly eligible male transfer student who received favorable treatment. As a result of this unfair treatment, my teammate Caitlin and I wore shirts that said Save Girls Sports and stated that boys and girls are different. It's common sense. XX does not equal XY. Our athletic director made me remove my shirt and told me it was like wearing a swastika in front of a Jewish person and said that I would face disciplinary action if I wore it again. My Title IX and free speech rights as a female matter too.
Jen Say, I mean, come on, right? That is horrifying.
It, you know, but I expect it at this point. They just sort of march out the, you know, terrorist and Nazi name calling whenever, you know, they're losing, yeah. essentially. And yeah, I'm here to tell you, I'm a Jewish person. I have family members who died in the Holocaust. This is not akin. This has nothing to do with Nazism. This is standing up for women and girls. Boys who want to compete in women's sports, they can compete in boys and men's sports. No one is banning them. No one is genociding anybody. Leah/Will Thomas recently made the statement that, you know, trans-identified athletes should get to compete in the category they want to compete in. So basically, they get to game the system, compete in any category they want, and the rest of us normies have to just abide by the rules. That's essentially what he is saying. I don't know if you saw the story about a rower at the University of Washington.
No.
This is a woman who this is a woman who claims to be a man. So this is a reverse story.
Huh.
Let me tell you what happened.
Okay.
A woman claiming to be a man. Guess what team this person competes on?
On the, well, okay, a woman. This gets very confusing. A woman maybe on the men's team? I don't know.
No.
Oh.
Of course not. No. He, quote unquote, he wants to compete on women's. And the reason, let me just tell you, the reason she wants to compete on women's is she's competed at the elite level for a very long time. And if she were to switch to men's, even though she identifies as a man,
yep.
she would not compete at that same elite level anymore.
There you go. That's the whole crux of this whole
thing.
It is the whole crux
of it. Right. Well, and then, you know, this I always go back to this because I remember what Riley said. But when you sent out one of your news releases, you talked about Chase Strangio, who is an ACLU lawyer and also a trans-identified female, that makes the case that there are no instances of men competing in women's sports. This is what they say because they use the language, and the reason they say that is because they can't admit that it's not a female, because if they do, the whole house of cards collapses. So that's why they try to use that deceptive language, and they say, look, this is not a man competing against, you know, women.
Right.
It's a woman competing against women.
Right, but they insist so strongly, you know, Chase Strangio at the ACLU, which is a woman who says that she is a man, insists there are no males in women's sports. Well, that's because it's a trick of language. He doesn't consider men who dress like women to be men. There are men in women's sports. There's over 3,600 examples of men taking trophies and medals from women. And they just, you know, they insist that this is about identity validation and inclusion. And yet, when a female rower who is a D1 rower, so this is high level, you know, this is not rec rowing, this is not D3 even, this is D1, who insists that she is a man, suddenly identity validation isn't important anymore because she just wants to win.
One of the things that we're told on a constant basis, first of all, there's only like one or two trans athletes even around. There's nobody doing this. And then the other thing is they're not winning anything, right? They make these claims on a regular basis. So no one's really being disadvantaged here. But that's not the truth.
No, that's a lie. I mean, it's a lie. Like I said, it depends what count you go by. There's a website called hecheated.org, which keeps really good records. Their count is 3,600 instances of men stealing medals and trophies from females. The UN said just a few months ago, the UN Council on Women said there are over 900 instances. That's just in the last few years. It's a lie. But you know what else is a lie? This idea that if we were to protect women's sports as being for women only, that that would require genital checks, which is what the Democrats are saying, which is a lie. They just will lie. They don't care. They lie.
I really can't believe that not one Democrat in the United States Senate, and even not John Fetterman, could vote for that. That really is something, especially when you look at the number. I mean, that's why Gavin Newsom, he was caught off guard, and he had to kind of admit, because I think deep down, a lot of these folks have to recognize, at least
I hope,
this is an issue of fairness. They just won't say it.
They totally know, but they're afraid of the very loud, screaming trans advocate bullies. They're bullies. They're a minority, but they are the loudest. 79% of Americans agree with us because it's common sense. And yet most of that 79% won't speak out because they're afraid of being called a transphobe and a bigot and, you know, getting hate mail like I get, being called out at work. I mean, they're afraid for reason that they'll lose their jobs, that they'll get, you know, violent threats. Look, Riley has been assaulted, physically assaulted. Melissa Beatty Smooth, who was the assistant coach at San Jose State University, lost her job.
Ugh.
So So they're not wrong to be afraid. I just feel like there's strength in numbers, and we are the majority, and the silent majority needs to speak up if we expect common sense to prevail.
Yeah, and even in the situation with, Stephanie Turner, you have a lot of people that have come forward, like some of the typical people, Martina Navratilova, J.K. Rowling, but you still don't have that elite athlete in this country that's a female that is willing to stand out and say, this is just wrong.
No, there's not one yet, which I think is evidence of how far we have to go. There's not a single, yes, you have Martina. Her competition days are behind her. She's one of the greatest tennis players of all time, so no shade to her. But we need currently competing high-level elite athletes to take a stand. And I know that there are some that agree with us. I know that there are many that agree with us. They are scared. They are afraid of losing their endorsement. They're afraid of losing the money. And I got to say? They're not wrong.
No, right. I get that.
They might.
It would be, look, if you put yourself in their position, you want to take a stand, but then you realize how ostracized you're going to become. And then, like you said, some of this goes into death threats and things along those lines. It's just unbelievable. But I do think we're making a lot of progress. I continually love, Jen, that you highlight all this. So I appreciate you coming on here in St. Louis. And I do love the gear. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We'll see. By the way, I paid for the gear. I didn't get free gear. I just want to make that clear. I went on the website, and I genuinely love it. And Becky has stolen my hat.
Good.
Damn, I love that hat. I'm going to have to get another one. Listen to some of the highlights here, though, for some of this that's still going on out there with these athletes, because she highlighted them. You have in several states, you have three males ranked number one in female categories in Oregon, Washington, and in California. In Oregon in mid-March, Ada Gallagher dominated the high school track and field in Portland, winning two golds for a second straight year. In Washington, Veronica Garcia, formerly known as Logan Brown, and Aspen Hoffman are continuing to run in the women's category in Washington State. Garcia was the 2024 girls state champion in the 400-meter. Hoffman has qualified for state in both track and country. In California, A.B. Hernandez, a junior at Jurupa Valley High School, won the triple jump by 8 feet at the Ontario Relays on February 22nd. We talked about that one
when it
happened. A male basketball player continues to play on the girls' team at the Waldorf School in San Francisco. In Washington, Oregon, and California, all are actively ignoring the new EO. This is despite Governor Newsom. Well, we just stated that recently, stating on his podcast that it's deeply unfair. He knows it. He just doesn't care to, take it any further. I do find that really fascinating that Gavin Newsom was just pinned down and he couldn't do anything but admit the truth. And I give him credit for finally admitting the truth. Nora Vardeni, who recently finished first in the girls' free skate at the 2025 Intermountain Classic Figure Skating Championships. She also participates in girls' high school swimming. That's a biological male. 30 gymnasts resulted were altered by various male athletes. The male gymnasts on the list do not identify as trans, but are allowed to compete against girls rather than boys if their school does not have a boys' team. The official USA Gymnastics transgender policy is that anyone can compete in women's gymnastics except at the elite level. So a lot of this continues. People are ignoring the EO. The Democrat representatives, even though, again, 70% of Democrats think this is nuts, the Democratic elected officials don't care. They say F you. So there you go. But I'd like to highlight it with Jen, XXXY Athletics. Great gear. Check it out. 524, Dwayne Patterson is coming up next. Fish Fry Fridays tomorrow, St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood. Come see us. We're going to do the whole show, including the Reardon Roundtable. And on the panel tomorrow, Jane Duker will be here. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. It's election day in the city next week. Well, the county as well. But the mayor's race certainly first and foremost on a lot of people's mind. Greg Keller, who always brings the fire, and John Gaskin will be here as well. So the president was on Air Force One, and he answered some questions. We aired some of it live, not all of it. The market, not so good today on the tariff stuff. Here's what he said.
Well, I mean, it's to be expected. This is a patient that was very sick. We really inherited a terrible economy, as you know, with a lot of problems, including loss of manufacturing and plants closed up all over the country. You know, we've lost 90,000 plants since NAFTA, if you think of that.
All right, so that's a little hard to hear because of the background noise with Air Force One, but he essentially said, look, there's going to be an adjustment period. I am so interested in what my friend Dwayne Patterson, who contributes at hotair.com, the host of the Dwayne's World podcast, has to say about tariffs. I opened my show today. I'm very, very nervous about the way that this is all playing out, but admittedly, don't know all the particulars of something that's very complicated. But how are you this afternoon?
Well, you see, that's the thing. Unless you know exactly what you're talking about on all this stuff, it's kind of hard to get the vapors and say, well, it should be this or it should be that, right?
I agree.
So, and by the way, thanks for having me on again. I love your shirt. It's not going to get you onto the fencing mat in collegiate athletics.
It is a good shirt, though.
It is a great shirt. And anyway, for those of you not watching online, it's kind of a fun shirt. Anyway, look, so the tariffs. I'm just looking at the results. If you're asking me what my political opinion of this is, the political side of this is, boy, am I really happy we're going through this transition period
now.
In March or April now, not a year from now when we're going into primary season, right?
Well, they know too. That's part of the expediency, yes.
So get this out of the way now. So the messaging of this, I think so far, has been mostly pretty good in how they're trying to make the case on this. And how they're trying to make the case on this is to a lot of working class people over the last three decades that have seen factories close everywhere. I'm sure you've seen it happen in Missouri, just like Pennsylvania has and the Rust Belt has. Lots of jobs have been hemorrhaged for the last two, three decades, and it's about time something changes. Now, for the market to say, well, but we don't like all the uncertainty, I understand, you know, what your perception of uncertainty is, but this is not anything new with Donald Trump. I had a clip today from Donald Trump on the Oprah Winfrey Show back in 1990 talking about the need for tariffs and getting a more fair trade system. This is not new.
Well,
this is something he's been talking about for years.
I'll do you one better. Here's Nancy Pelosi in 1992.
In terms of jobs, this is the biggest and cruelest hoax of all. The China trade supports 170,000 jobs in the United States. 170,000 jobs, whereas our imports from China support 10 million jobs at least. The fact is that U.S.-China trade is a job loser.
All right. Well, that seemingly was a different position back then, wasn't it?
Well, that was before she figured out how to make money on the deal, right? So that's kind of what she did. But look, so here's what's going to happen. You saw GM announce in Indiana they are rapidly increasing production of trucks. They are going to increase overtime and increasing the workforce there. You saw one of the leaders of Ford hit Fox News this morning and say, hey, you know what? We want you to buy a Ford. How about we offer employee pricing to everybody through June? So you're seeing a lot of economic movement towards American-made goods. You saw Argentina announced just a couple of hours ago they're dropping all tariffs on the U.S. They're the first country to do so. They said, you know what? He's absolutely right. He's got a point. We're dropping it all. Let's go back to zero-zero basis between the two countries. We saw Israel drop their tariffs down to zero, and Trump, on that same Air Force One gaggle, announced that Netanyahu's going to come to the White House again next week, and they're going to have a little talk over that, and they're going to get that straightened out. So there's all sorts of activity where this may not be more than a hiccup in the overall scheme of things. In 2-3 months, we could be done with this and have, instead of a $1.2 trillion trade deficit globally, we could maybe equalize this thing out to where it's almost a parity.
Well,
and
look,
that's
what
Trump's looking for all the way along.
Yeah, and I think patience is certainly warranted because there's this expectation, and a lot of it is driven by the legacy media, that everything has to be done at once. Now, in fairness, you know, Trump promises a lot of things, and he's talking about a big boom. I liked what Senator Kennedy had to say about this, Dwayne.
Tariffs are like whiskey. A little whiskey under the right circumstances can be refreshing. Too much whiskey under the wrong circumstances, and you end up drunk as a goat.
he's my favorite.
I totally agree with the guy. I'm not a fan of all the tariffs, and he is going like there's not a day to waste, and I appreciate that. Long term, though, I don't think you're going to be talking about these tariffs in 2-3 years. I think the pain is going to be on the other countries that rely on their exports to us that we're no longer going to be buying because it's too expensive now in relative terms. And so they've got a lot more to lose than we do. They're going to start to change their economic policy towards us first. When they do, things are going to improve rapidly. The bottom line is, when Trump says the economy is going to boom, we just added 155,000 jobs on Friday. 155,000 jobs. It was expected to be 112. We exceeded it. Most of it was manufacturing jobs. It was an unexpected plus up of manufacturing jobs. You have seen roughly $5 trillion of commitment from foreign money coming into the U.S. and investing in plants and personnel here to start making things here in the country. That has nothing but a booming effect on the economy if you just let it play out.
Yeah, and I think some of that, look, I opened the show. I had a couple of friends that called last night that certainly aren't Trump supporters, but looking at the stock market, they were looking at the futures, screaming, oh, he said this, he said that. I'm like, oh my gosh, can you? And by the way, these are not people, this is what we have to point out. This is certainly the case with the Washington media as well. These aren't necessarily people that pointed out anything during the Biden administration that was troubling, but all of a sudden, they want to focus on everything right now. So my advice to my friends is, hey, I've kind of put August as a marker. Just, I pull it out of my ass, Dwayne. But let's see where some of this is at the end of the summer, where the economy is. Maybe we are slipping into a recession. I don't think that's Trump's fault. I think that the warning signs of that were there in the, you know, the latter part of last year, and we're looking at negative growth, at least in the first quarter.
I'm not even buying that. I think by the time we get to summer, by the time we get to June, I think a lot of this is going to play out. My guess is we're not going to be seeing any tariffs dropped on, reciprocal tariffs on Argentina as of a week from now. I don't think you will be on Israel. I think you're going to see countries start stacking up like planes coming into O'Hare Airport saying, okay, let's renegotiate this trade thing. Canada wants to renegotiate trade. You saw that blowhard Doug Ford, the premier from Ontario. Last week, his talk was, I'm going to inflict the most pain possible on the Americans for this trade thing. And then yesterday, he shows up on CNBC and says, well, you know, we'd be happy to lift all of our tariffs. We'd be happy to zero out all of our tariffs as long as Trump does the same thing in return. That's all that Trump's been asking for from day one.
Well, right. There's definitely negotiation to all this, and that's why, you know, the freak out is certainly not warranted, but a little concern might be. Dwayne Patterson with hotair.com. Okay, I have to ask you this, because I saw that your boss read Fight. Have you read Fight yet?
I have gotten about a quarter of the way through it. I've done the prep work side of it to get Hugh ready. He reads these things in and out. I can't get over the one glaring question that every interview should start and end it with, which is, why are you telling us now?
Yes.
Why did you not tell us in, 2020 when he was running, when we all said he was loopy?
Yeah, this is Jonathan Allen of NBC News and Ari Parnes of The Hill, reporters that I don't remember being very voracious and aggressive on getting some questions out of the previous White House ever. But all of a sudden, they have this big epiphany. Oh, look, we got to reveal all these things that happened where we, you know, one of my favorites is you had to put fluorescent tape on the ground so Biden knew how he was walking around. You heard that one, of course.
Oh, absolutely. The fraud that was perpetrated on the American people from 2020 forward, and it wasn't just a fraud done by Democrats and the people that were around Team Biden. The fraud was done by the American media that was doing everything they could to perpetrate this fraud in order to stop Trump at all costs. That there is no way that you're ever going to redeem the media, the legacy, the now resistance media. You're never going to redeem them in my eyes after the fraud they pulled on the American people.
I completely agree with you. And that's what makes this so hypocritical. But on the other hand, are there things from your standpoint in here that are certainly worth telling?
Oh, absolutely. The reportage as it goes is actually pretty damning, pretty telling, and pretty convincing. Ron Klain, the Prime Minister of the United States under the Biden Regency, Ron Klain does not come off very well in this book at all. He knew from the first day we got problems and started the cover-up. He does not come off well. There's lots of people that are in the Beltway that were conspiring with media for 4 years that Amy Parnes and John Allen kind of turned on now, and you're seeing all the baggage now. And I'll tell you, Nancy Pelosi comes across as a glorified assassin. She absolutely knifed Joe Biden, knifed him worse than any gangbanger in inner city would.
So it's interesting. As we were talking here, I just happened to, you know, Google something, and there was a review of the book that came up in the Washington Post, and they ripped it because they felt it was too nice to Trump. So if you don't do, you know, if you can't be anti-Trump, you do a book about what happened with the flaws of the other campaign, that's verboten. We want to only hear criticism of this guy. They're criticizing it because, oh, there was barely a mention of Project 2025. All these things. There's next to nothing on issues that were important in the 2024 election. Well, guess what? The book is about, in theory, the cover-up, even though the reporters that wrote the book were part of the cover-up.
It's like Jake Tapper announcing he's going to write a tell-all book.
That's a bigger joke, you know, because I don't know these two as well and what they represent.
They're very good reporters, but they still don't. To me, it doesn't get them off the hook for not covering this earlier.
By the way, you know what Spicer does to me? I had Sean on earlier this week. Every time we talk about Jake Tapper, he puts the image of Jake Tapper in his Hooters clothing in my eyes, because he worked at Hooters. He was like the Hooters guy, which I think is still one of the greatest political
man, if I could
questions.
Tell you stories about Spicer. When you and I get time off air, we'll talk about Spicer. He's a good buddy.
I do like Sean quite a bit, but I'd love to hear those stories. All right, dude, well, thank you so much for jumping on here this afternoon. I was curious about where you thought things were heading on the tariffs, and you're in California, so what kind of opinion do you have? I just had Jen Say on talking about some of the stuff with the trans sports issue, but of course, they refused to pass this bill in Sacramento that I'm not sure Governor Newsom would have signed anyway.
We're still nuts out here. We're still totally woke.
So nothing's going to change in California.
Yeah, not anytime soon.
Thank you, Dwayne Patterson. Have a great, great evening and weekend.
You too.
All right, we'll see you. Take care. We're coming up. Audio cut of the day is next. Oh, little Eric Clapton to close out the show with the bumper music, and I'll put the list and the Spotify playlist. I just started doing this last week. Up on the Twitter. I took my baby to see your show. Fish Fry Fridays continue tomorrow. Very much looking forward to being out and about again. We get started at 3 o'clock at St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood. That is right on Brentwood Boulevard. We would love to see you. We'll be there for the roundtable and beyond. I'm hearing rumors that Cusimano, who would always join us on a Friday anyway, might be there in person tomorrow. So we're looking forward to that. We'll have the whole gang involved on the roundtable. Jane Duker, Greg Keller, GOP consultant, John Gaskin will be on Jane's side, all there. Our friend Brad Young, you hear him filling in for folks here on 97.1 FM Talk. He's also our legal analyst. We'll also be by tomorrow, so we'd love to see you in Brentwood.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, I'm going to use a few here, and we'll kind of admit that the notion that Jonathan Allen and this Ari Parnes reporter are doing this book, I mean, it's a grift. There's no doubt about it. They want to make a lot of money, and it's very dishonest from the get-go, because you were people and you're talking to people that refuse to acknowledge the dimension that was in the White House. But it's still kind of fun to hear about all the things that were going on that we kind of knew were going on anyway.
He needed, again, fluorescent tape on the floor to show where to go. He needed teleprompters to talk to small groups, small donor groups. He would put on makeup early in the morning to do cabinet meetings, and then sometimes do the makeup and not do the meetings. Right. So they all knew that there was a level of decline. I think there were varying appreciations for that.
Here's a question for people in our lives who voted for Kamala. Do you think that they're that dumb that they didn't know this stuff was happening, or did they just not care? My guess is they didn't care
because
they hated Trump so much,
yep.
Right? But these details are quite something.
She's like, Joe, you have got...
Well, this one's on Kamala, all right? Kamala on, you know, getting Biden's backing.
She's like, Joe, you have got to endorse me. And so they go back and forth on this before Biden does it. Obama definitely did not think she should be the Democratic nominee.
He would not endorse that day either.
He would not endorse that day either. She talked to him. He said to her, I don't want to put my thumb on the scale. She was disappointed, but not necessarily shocked, because he'd been behind the scenes trying to undermine her for the last several weeks before Biden even got out.
Yeah, so here's my guess. Look, Barack Obama, no matter what you might think of him personally, he ain't dumb, right? And
no,
guess what?
No.
He knew that she was dumb. I mean, there's no other way to put it there.
President Obama absolutely did not think that Joe Biden should continue, according to our sources close to President Obama. And he also didn't want Kamala Harris to be the replacement for Biden. He didn't think that she was the best choice for Democrats.
And she wasn't.
He worked really behind the scenes for a long time to try to have a mini primary or an open convention, or mini primary leading to an open convention. Did not have faith in her ability to win the election. He was really working against her.
I forgot. I read this part. He was in fact, Obama wanted Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan to be at the top of the ticket. And I can't remember, but two white people, which is interesting. Huh. My guess is he was looking at Michigan because you need Michigan. You need, you know, the swing states. But it's interesting. Here's Army Parnes, who's the other author.
He wasn't convinced about Kamala Harris. He wasn't convinced she could win. And so he wanted other people. He thought that other people stood a better chance. And that's why he was calling people like Jim Clyburn to kind of test the water and see if there was a mood or a vibe for an open convention. Yeah. But he was immediately shut down.
I'm trying to get the book sent to me. Sean Spicer was on the show yesterday, and he has it, but he had to sign an NDA. I mean, it was real quick with DocuSign, because you're not allowed to say too much about it at this point. It comes out next Tuesday. They are doing a round of interviews. Wouldn't mind having one of those, but we'll see. And, you know, I mentioned Dwayne Patterson works with Hugh Hewitt. Hugh had raved about it. He said it's certainly worth a read, and he wrote it himself. And then I'll leave you with this. This is kind of ominous. I'm not even so sure I disagree with him, but did you hear Alec Baldwin today?
Oh, I did.
Okay.
Say what?
Yeah, here it is.
You can see now that we are in a pre-Civil War culture now. I look at the politics of it, of where people are in this country today, in the division, and how they're holding fast, and no one's going to falter, and it's bad.
You know, there's a large part of that, Sue, that I completely agree with. It is bad. I mean, I get this message yesterday, and I ignore them, but this is someone who's harassed me for years, and I guess they love to do this. This is the compassionate left. Ready? It's a shame that assholes like you are given radio shows to spread your blank. I'd like to see you drop dead.
That's nice.
Yeah. I get this on a regular basis, by the way. But that is the compassionate left, ladies and gentlemen. Those are the ones that we're supposed to look up to for some reason. Unbelievable. Hey, we'll see you at the fish fry tomorrow.
Yay.
Have a great night.
Get more at 971talk.com.